This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Corey Majors is hanging out on spring break with his kiddos. I'm still being reminded of what I said last week when I had my Duke basketball meltdown, and that is
right.
Fair.
Yeah, that's right.
Right now, We have Zach Woolchuk. It feels like it would be foolish not to do a top 10, would it not?
Let's do it. And I'm sure we'll get the top 10 at 420. I've sent Eric a couple of ideas just to try and help out. We'll see what Eric decides to do. So you want to make sure you stick around for the top 10 at 420 with the G-Bag Nation.
Do you ever get caught up in a, no, that's my idea?
No.
And so you're like, I went to this show for now, so please don't use my idea.
I don't care. They could actually reuse the list. But there was a couple lists that I saw that I felt like this would be Eric specific. This would be good.
Nice.
Like the most jacked basketball players of all time. You know, nobody loves the male body quite like my guy Eric.
Yeah.
So I felt like that'd be a perfect top 10
He's
for him to do. He is.
Yeah.
He is. And also a physical specimen in his own right. That's why I
true.
Love him to death.
I'm impressed that his handsomeness continues even after the haircut. I thought with the haircut, we're going to take a giant drop in his handsomeness. I don't believe that's been the case.
Really no weakness to his game. I also thought, I used to see him without glasses and thought, gosh, you look a little odd. And then now with the LASIK, he never wears glasses. And I think hasn't changed anything. So some of us just aren't quite gifted and sculpted like that. 877-881-1053. What are the best wide receiver duos of all time? That will be the question today. Why? Well, did you guys see Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins? My gosh! Ooh. Those guys are getting the bag. They have been paid. And apparently Trey Hendrickson is also in discussions with Cincy to go ahead and get some money.
I mean, you might as well, right? Like, if you already paid those, you might as well be like,
let's do it. Let's do it. And yeah, I agree with you, 817. Higgy might be full-on Dwight Howard. He hasn't officially become Dwight Howard, but he's slowly morphing into Dwight Howard.
All right, I'm going to tell you a story that's not going to help my case.
Okay.
And that's how you know it's a true story, because it doesn't make me look good. So we had an intern at the newspaper. Shout out to my old buddy, Nadal. And
Rafi Nadal?
No. Oh. And so she did not have a boyfriend at the time. And some guy was coming up. And she was like, oh, is he cute? And I gave her the breakdown. I thought I was a good breakdown. She goes, I don't know. You're a guy. You probably don't know. And then the dude came in and she came back over to me and she goes, oh my gosh, he is really good looking. And I go, see, don't you ever question my taste in men again. And so I really think that I can present an objective look at that. But that plus what happened last Thursday, it's not a good look. It's probably not a good look.
Mm-mm. No, no.
And I'm just saying, if I see a handsome man, I'm comfortable enough to go, that's a handsome man. Good job. So, like, if my wife and I are watching a TV show and somebody takes their shirt off and they have abs for days, I'll just be like, good for him.
You pause and rewind?
No, I'm just proud of him that he has the devotion to stick to it that I did not have.
Yeah. No, it's... Trust me, it's tough. It is real tough. T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase have now combined.
I'm sorry for throwing you off.
For a salary of $69 million.
Nice.
That's $10 million higher than any other wide receiver duo. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are at 58.3, and A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith are at $57 million. But that's $69
million. That's pretty damn impressive.
For Chase and Higgins.
Yes.
Is the most, which is incredible for them. Some texts that came in, best wide receiver duos of all time. We had a Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce that was texted in.
That's pretty high.
We've got 1,000%. It's got to be Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne from the 574. Ooh. Jerry Rice and Joe Montana was the best.
No, that's not what we're doing. If you wanted to say Jerry Rice and John Taylor, I'm here for that.
Yeah.
But no, that's not, that is wrong.
I'd like to vote Michael Irvin and Alvin Harper.
Ooh.
Hell of a duo.
I could see that.
Really good.
I could see that.
An excellent duo. Maybe even we could do like Amari Cooper and CD Lamb. No, that one didn't really work out.
Let me ask, give you an example.
Williams, Miles Austin?
No to that.
No?
Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin.
Boom, a good one.
Is that better than the CD Cooper one?
Yeah, yeah. Because okay. There won't be a Cowboy tandem on here, and I can tell you that Cardinals tandem, it's gonna make the top 10.
Okay.
It's going to make it.
Okay.
Okay, this is from the 33rd team. This is where this list is originated. So if you have an issue with it, take it up with them, not me. I'm just a messenger. Top duos of all time. Honorable mention is A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. And they have been damn good together.
I could see that. Could
over
you
the course
see
of the last
them
few years.
Breaking into this list then?
I could.
Okay.
I could, especially now that they've got a Super Bowl, because this list came out prior to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And if they continue on the trajectory that they're on right now, I mean, if they're both getting 1,000-yard seasons. Now, maybe Jalen Hurts hurts them.
Okay.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Is there any chance Jerry Rice is on this list twice?
Are you thinking with Tim Brown and the Raiders?
Well, I was going to say maybe T.O.,
ooh, they do not have T.O. and Jerry Rice on here. So no, T.O. is only, or Jerry Rice is only on it once.
Okay.
But I think you could make cases. Okay. Like Jerry Rice and Tim Brown, two Hall of Famers,
yeah,
made the Super Bowl with the Raiders. Rich Gannon won an MVP. They were really, really good together.
Yeah.
But you're right. Jerry Rice and T.O., that's scary. Like, you're talking about arguably two of the top five all-time receivers
sure
in history.
Yeah.
That's,
maybe it was just the crossover wasn't the peak of both
sure
men's powers. I get that.
Number 10 is Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle.
Ooh, okay.
Now,
okay,
with Tua, this is 2 years ago, not this past season, when it seemed like Hill and Waddle were never on the same page.
Yeah.
In 13 games with Tua, together, they had 16.5 yards per catch, 15 touchdowns, 145 catches, and just under 2,400 yards. Like, they were darn productive together. The Marx brothers, Clayton and Duper, Mark
Super
Clayton.
Super Duper. I wasn't sure if they would be. It's a shame that that team never actually, like, went all the way
yeah
and won anything, because I feel like Clayton and Duper get lost to time.
They were also one that was mentioned here that they just didn't. They didn't end up putting a little bit higher.
The top 10.
They didn't. Number 9 is Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt. I thought they'd be a little bit higher.
That feels low.
Yeah, I thought they'd be higher.
Yeah,
one of the best.
That feels low.
Isaac Bruce receiving totals ranked 5th. His receiving yardage placed him 2nd in NFL history at the time of his retirement. Torrey Holt was a shade behind Bruce in their career totals, but a bit better than him when the two were key cogs on the greatest show on turf.
Can I ask you a question as we go through this, as obviously big day for Chase and Higgins?
Mm-hmm.
Are you worried that, not this list specifically, but lists in the future will be too slanted towards or modern football, because obviously way easier to put up yards with
yes
the defensive rules in place?
Yeah, if they're going just based on production, then 100%. No question. I think
okay
that we're gonna fall into that. But then again, like, I wonder how many teams are going to be willing to pay the two receivers like this. Like, what the Eagles did seems like a bargain now compared to what the Bengals are doing with Higgins and Chase. I don't know how many teams are going to look at, okay, we've got two stud receivers and let's continue this. I mean, look, the Rams even just said bye-bye to Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
They've got their own tandem now, maybe a new one in Devontae Adams and Puka Nacua. But that's going to be moving forward. How many teams, when they have this, like Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson, very underrated. Love that from the 940. And I apologize. The Marks do make this cut. They're a little bit higher than what the Tyreek Hill and Waddle.
Oh, okay. I think they should be. Yeah, absolutely. I do think.
Number eight, and this has been texted in quite a bit, Lynn Swan, John Stallworth from the Steelers.
Okay. I get that.
Which hurts, you know, from a Cowboys perspective, but they were very, very good. Swan was an All-Pro three times. Stallworth was an All-Pro in 1979. They won four Super Bowls together.
And that's why I like the All-Pro, because I feel like that can transcend you through some of the statistical stuff that can throw you off.
Seven is the Mark brothers, Mark Clayton, Mark Duper. So they come in at seven on here.
Super duper.
The super dupers. Six is Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne from the Colts.
Okay, right. Hmm. Okay, that means they've got Fitzy and Bolden in the top five.
Yeah, they do. Now, they played 5 years together. They were a terror, especially at home. They had crazy numbers at home. At that time, it was the RCA Dome. Number five is the tandem that this list is in honor of. It's already Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Together,
wow.
Those two have been extremely productive. They made the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Now, last year, both of them... Well, really, T. Higgins was pretty banged up. But you also have, they're just a year apart in age. So I think what Ja'Marr Chase is 24 right now. Yeah. T. Higgins is 25. They've both signed. They have a chance to become number one with how long they're going to play together.
This feels a little...
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
A little projected to me. I think that's high.
I think it is a projection. Like, I don't think you should be, I don't think you should put them ahead of Marvin Harrison or Reggie Wayne right now. I don't think they should be ahead of Swan and Stallworth, and maybe even your Marks, you know, the super dupers. Yeah. Maybe even they should be higher. So I agree with you on the projection. Number four is your tandem with Fitzgerald and Bolden.
It's got to be, right?
They come in at four.
Yeah, Anquan Boldin was really good, but Larry Fitzgerald, I think you can make the claim that he's, what, the third best wide receiver of all time? Like, you can have him pretty high up on the list.
Larry Fitzgerald absolutely should. I mean, I've never seen a receiver basically go on a Super Bowl run by putting the team on his back like he did in that postseason. He had a touchdown every single game. I think he went over 100 yards every single game. Heck, in that Super Bowl, he had two touchdowns and almost won it for Arizona. Number three. Randy Moss and Wes Welker in 2007.
Ooh, I was just waiting for Chris Carter. I do not think I would have guessed that.
Yeah, okay. And Randy Moss is the only receiver who's on here twice.
Okay.
I'll tell you that. So Moss and Welker caught 112 passes, 8 touchdowns in 07. Obviously, Randy Moss had the 20 touchdown season.
Yeah.
So they were absolutely brilliant together.
For just the one season, though? Is that where... That feels... I think it's too high.
I think it's a little too high, too. The body of work here is just not quite as long as some of the other tandems, but gosh, that was a magical season. Number two is Jerry Rice and John Taylor.
Okay. I mean,
now,
go ahead.
They write the toughest decision they had to make was whether to put Rice and Taylor ahead of Moss and Welker. John Taylor wasn't a great receiver, but he had a three-year period where he was terrific and a great compliment to Rice. They compared 1989 to 1991 and then 2007-2009 with Welker. So you have receptions would go Welker over Taylor, yards, but average catch and touchdowns, John Taylor has a big-time edge over Welker. 16 average per reception, 10 for Welker, 26 touchdowns to 15 touchdowns.
Okay.
And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But number one, best wide receiver duo in the history of the NFL, it's Randy Moss and Chris Carter.
Okay.
From 98 to 2000, 34 touchdowns for Chris Carter, 43 for Randy Moss. They both had over 225 catches. And yards per catch, you had 18.4 for Randy Moss, 13.4 for Chris Carter. They were absolutely unbelievable. And I will always argue that 98 Vikings team, maybe the best that never won it.
And I know that people are going to say the 07 Patriots, and I get that. I was so excited in 98 because you were going to get Broncos against the Vikings, and you were going to have the two teams that, like, clearly most of the year felt like they were the best two teams in the NFL. And when it was the Falcons, I was like, well, that sucked.
And then they got absolutely blown out in that Super Bowl. Ugh.
Excellent. Top 10 today, Wooly Bully.
Thank you, sir. Usually Brian craps on it.
Oh, would that make you feel more at home if I kind of ran down your list a little bit while we were going along?
No. I appreciate sometimes the words of affirmation. It is my love language.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we puck around and find out, is the Stars division dream done? And what's up with Leaky Ottinger as of late?
Leaky?
That and the Savannah Bananas next on The Fan.
Opening minute of overtime. Here comes McKinnon, dropping it back to McCarr. Cal McCarr cuts to the middle, shoots, scores!
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's talk about them Dallas Stars, and I'm going to have some tough things to accept in this segment. So the Stars play a pair over the weekend. They lose a pair over the weekend, though. Well, Chuck, you brought it up. By getting to overtime, you do at least get the 1 point out of the Colorado Avalanche game. But I want to go back to Winnipeg. We talked with Brian Ray on Friday, and I asked the question, do you need to win this game against Winnipeg, probably in regulation, if you're going to keep alive your dream of winning the Central? And he said, yeah, I think you probably do. That is not what happened. And unfortunately, the Stars lose that game 4-1. Winnipeg jumped out to an early lead. They were able to kind of coast to the end. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second. But have you accepted the dream is probably dead of the Dallas Stars winning the Central?
I have. I know they have one more matchup head-to-head. But the odds of them being able to catch Winnipeg are not high. Right now, it's like, can you just hold on to the second spot in the Central and just be able to keep the Avs at bay?
Now, there's been a kind of a little bit of a gap created. So it's Winnipeg, Dallas, and Colorado. And then I know Minnesota's primed to get a wild card and all that good stuff. But it looks like you're probably going to play Colorado. Because remember, the playoff seedings are different. I know this used to drive Mike Bassick freaking insane.
It is annoying, and I hate it. I want to go back to the old way of doing this.
We don't do 1-8 anymore. Here's how it goes, in case you didn't know. So each division will have its top three seeds. So right now it would be Winnipeg as C1, Dallas as C2, Colorado as C3. They'll do the same thing in all the divisions. And then the top two other teams in the Eastern Conference outside of those will get the wild card. The top two in the West will get the wild cards for that conference. And that's just how it is. It's to kind of foster more rivalries because you're like, you're guaranteed if you're second or third to play somebody in your division in the first round of the playoffs. Even if you win your division, there's still a pretty decent shot that you'll play somebody from your division. But I do not think it is helpful for people who are trying to disseminate how the playoff bracket looks.
No, not at all. And last year, did any of us feel like, okay, the Stars are the best team in the West? They have the best record. They're the number one overall seed. Your reward is, here's Vegas.
Yeah.
It just did not feel like, okay, and maybe this year it's the same thing. Like, just because Winnipeg, go for it. You know, it, starting off with Colorado, that is a really, really tough matchup. It might just be no matter where you end up placing in the West, it's a gauntlet just to make the cup final.
I mean, look, because a probable road right now would be you open against Colorado. Hopefully you have home ice. Then you play Winnipeg, and then you finish up against either Vegas or Edmonton. So, I mean, none of those series, it feels like, are going to be easy, which is why I kind of wanted to throw out this question. I like Jake Ottinger a lot, like a lot, a lot. I found out on social media, maybe there are some people who like him less, but I like Jake Ottinger quite a bit. These last few games, though, because I think you can go back to the Edmonton game a week before, and man, he's been leaky this month, because go back to Edmonton, Winnipeg, Colorado, all road games. I concede that, but he gave up a total of 13 goals in those games. And you've started to see, because what it used to be the great thing about Ottinger is, hey, it might not always be a shutout or one, but he's always going to give up maybe two, maybe three goals, keep in the game, give you the opportunity to win. But if you look at his goals against this month, you're at 3.57, because he's had strings of where he gave up 3 goals, 2 goals, 5 goals, 4 goals, 4 goals. These last 3 games have been his worst of the season. What does that concern you? Because I'll admit, with about 16 games to go until the playoffs, that concerns the heck out of me. And why do we think it's happening?
Let me ask you this. In last year's postseason run, was there a game that you think Otter stole that game for you?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because I remember in the time thinking no. And I know with Jake Ottinger, he's been really good for the majority of the season. And that game 7 against Calgary is one that will forever be a historical, lore, all-time hockey goaltending performance. But Jake Ottinger needs to step up and play better in the postseason.
See, and you know what's a shame is if you don't get that final goal, and I know this is just the way of sports, then you don't get a chance to change the narrative. Because you know what I would have said? Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals last year. But I know, obviously, they ended up losing that game in double overtime.
But that's fair. He kept you in the game. Exactly. I get what you're saying. But you didn't win it.
Exactly. And so that's tough because I can't use that as an example, right? But had the Stars been the team that scored in double overtime, I would have been like, his save percentage was like, I don't know, like 940 or 950. He only gave up 2 goals in an overtime game, but in a double overtime game. But instead, what happened is you lose and you're like, well, their goalie kept
But that's what it takes. If you want to go and win it, it's Binnington on that run that St. Louis went on, right? It's, I mean, heck, the year the Stars won it, when you go back to Ed Belfour, Eddie the Eagle, I mean, it was unbelievable performances against other elite goalies, Patrick Waugh, Dominic Hasek, some of the best the game's ever seen. So when these teams are going to go on these cup runs, there's usually a game or two where you're looking at your netminder and saying that dude stood on his head, was incredible, whether it was a shutout, whether it was a 2-1 victory. And Otter's had some great moments in the postseason, but we've also seen maybe a lack of consistency a little bit. And I think usually I will blame the defense in front of him because I don't think the Stars have been a great defensive team. I still think what might end up being the doing for them is their top four at the blue line good enough?
And as much as we were all, and I want to make this very clear, all stoked about the Rantanen deal, right? I really thought there was going to be a defensive deal that came along with that, or a specifically defensive-minded deal. And I know you can say, well, look back, it was a few weeks earlier, the Stars had made a couple of moves as well. Did not love the defensive move that they made there as much. I really thought the Stars were going to make another move to get somebody back on the blue line. And that not happening is concerning because, and it'll always, I know it's chicken and the egg. Like, is Ottinger leaky? Is the defense in front of him leaky? Take a look at the shots on goal, and that'll probably answer some of your questions. But now that you're probably not going to change it, especially with concerns about Miro and the if, not the when, that he comes back, I'm concerned about this. And I saw something that you'd said along that probably kind of fits this narrative is the best goalie tandems.
Yeah.
Or power ranking the goalie situations. So the Stars are 7th, which is unfortunate because, and this was before yesterday's game, you're like, that's about right. But then who's number one? It's Winnipeg. Obviously it's Winnipeg. You've got Hellebuck there. And I am concerned. I think Casey DeSmith has done an awesome job this year. I'm concerned that this is a terrible time to fall into a rut. And so I'm hoping there's still, you know, almost about a month left in the season that you can break out of that in time for the playoffs, because you're going to need a couple of stand on your head performances if this team is going to go win the cup, which is what the expectations. Anything short to me of winning the cup this year is a disappointment.
I agree. I mean, they and they essentially did that with the Rantanen move, right?
Yes.
When you're forfeiting your future and basically spending a bunch of picks, and Jim Neal's done this a couple of times with the Granlin and CC move.
And it's gotten him so close.
And it has. And now and last year the Tanev trade I thought was like, okay, is this the one? But yes. You're looking at it, it's like you need Leon Bischel to step up for you because you're top four. That's kind of what we talk about come playoff time when you're rotating guys in. And I thought Ray did an excellent job of describing like the four lines and how other teams like they really maybe only have three lines that they feel confident in. In the postseason, you're kind of shortening the bench, if you will, as well. So you're hoping it's Miro and it's Lindell. Then what's it going to be? Harley and Bischel. And I know those are going to be two young defensemen, but like, do you feel great about Lyubushkin? Do you feel great about Dumba? Do I feel great about Cody Ceci? Brendan Smith's been a rotating piece for you right now as a defenseman. Those four right there, Bischel, Thomas Harley, and then you better darn well have Miro and Esa Lindell.
Now, for Miro, because you bring up a whole different set of discussions. So I know Jim Neal, before the trade deadline, had said maybe Haskinen could be back in time for the playoffs. They would have a better idea mid to late March. All right, well, obviously, if you're anxious or something, even being close to mid-March counts as mid-March. And so he was asked a couple days ago, hey, this counts as mid-March. Where the heck are we? And Pete DeBoer said that Haskinen hasn't even started skating yet, and there's no further update on his status. So that's not to say that he wouldn't be available or he wouldn't be available in the second round or anything like that, but it's tough to have these discussions when the update on Miro is he has not started to skate yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's
because at least Sagan's skating.
Yeah, that's tough to do too much more with then.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let us know when he starts to skate and we'll go from there. One positive, you did get Rope back out there against the Avalanche yesterday. I know, obviously, the game didn't go how we wanted, but you did get him back out there. He was able to, we talked about he needed to slow his heartbeat, mm-hmm. just take a beat, and he was back out there. So I think that is a great development because obviously he's in your group of top players. And if you don't 100%. Have him, well, then I don't know how I think this playoff.
I don't think it's going to. I think you have to have him. If you don't, then we've got big time issues. But you're right. It's great to at least get Rope back in there. Him and Rantanen together. I mean, that's a big part of why they were able to make this move with the Finnish Mafia. They've played together. They've got a good relationship.
You love that nickname.
Let's make it happen.
Now, to go along with that, actually, this has nothing to do with that. I don't know why I said that. That was ridiculous. This is a total side story that has nothing to do with the Dallas Stars. The Savannah Bananas.
Woo, banana time.
Saturday night. Did you see that they legitimately sold out Raymond James Stadium in Tampa?
Amazing.
It really is, isn't it?
It is.
So this marked the first time that the team ever played in an NFL stadium, and it feels safe to say that it was a massive success. 65,000 people went to go watch this game. What is it that you think gives it this kind of appeal? Because I know, like, if you're in your minor league stadium, you're doing bits every night, and you're like, this might be more fun than the alternative. But to fill up 65,000 for a pseudo-baseball game, I know it's baseball, but you know what I'm saying. Are you surprised that they have this level of appeal? And we talked about when they were going to be in Frisco, like, the wait list was unbelievable. Like, they just have that appeal right now.
TikTok, man. I think TikTok, they have done an excellent job of promoting themselves on social media. They've got players that have their individual TikToks they're constantly making videos for. So I think they've really done a good job of, and something baseball hasn't, right, is really marketing towards the younger audience. So now you've got kids that are like, I really want to go see this. And it's, I mean, the entertainment value of it.
Yeah.
Like maybe it's a one and done thing. I've never actually gotten to go see them. So maybe it's so like, okay, I've seen it once and it's customers. Like, okay, cool. Like, have you done that? Does the novelty wear off? But I do think they do a great job of appealing to the younger fan base, but also what they've done with social media to generate interest in what they're going to do.
All right. That is interesting. Alec, is that kind of where you fall? Because I'm also curious about the return, return ticket buyer. I mean, it feels like it's got to be some people because they're doing great.
Yeah, I think the social media aspect definitely is what's carrying it because I don't seek them out. but I consume a lot of their content because of the ways that they've been able to manufacture interest just by getting other people invested. It gets reposted onto my timelines, and then I'm going down a wormhole on their TikTok page of what bits did they do in this game? Oh, this has a million views. What did they do here that was entertaining and funny? And I mean, it's a nice escape from reality. If anything, like, it's cool seeing the home plate umpire dancing and stuff when usually he's like the biggest villain of every baseball game. Seeing him involved.
He's trying to stop their hijinks and shenanigans.
Exactly. And then you just see a random dude walking out on stilts and you're like, why? What is the reason? Like, even if it doesn't make sense or it doesn't exactly resonate with me, I'm still watching it because I'm like, I have no idea what the hell is happening right now, but it's kind of fun. So kudos to them for making, you know, essentially like a summer league baseball team interesting.
Yeah, that is a great point from both of you gentlemen. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's chit-chat with those fellas from the G-Bag Nation right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Here comes the pinch. That's right down the middle for a called third strike. Fastball catches Baldwin looking, and John Gray gets out of a second and third nobody out situation, doesn't give up a run. Inning and a half complete. Rangers lead it 2-0.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, trying to figure out why the morning show is still the most toxic show on The Fan. Right now, I'm kidding, Sean. I'm kidding. Relax.
I don't know. Bobby got really mad.
I'm kidding too, Bobby. Right now, courtesy of D&M Leasing, it's time for our chit chat with those fellas from the G-Bag Nation. Gentlemen, how is ya?
Terrific, Heggie.
I'm going to be doing okay, even though you didn't ask. That's okay. If you tell me not to be worried about the Rangers pitching conundrum. Oh, no.
Oh, Brian's not the right one to ask.
I can't say that for sure right now.
Thank
Hagee.
You.
You know, I think there's a part of all of us that just wants to be like, no, you know, they were champs and they've spent a lot of money and this is a good team, damn it. Yeah. You know, stop me.
There you go. But,
you know, this is rough. You know,
what did we do? What did we do in this city for sports? What did we do wrong? Yeah. Seriously, what did we do wrong?
Got hurt too, and like, hey, are they gonna have to forfeit games to go along with still being sad that Nico is gone? Now all the rain. I mean, that Luca is gone. Now all the Rangers pitchers are getting hurt.
What do we do? Can we point our finger at something?
Well, I think it starts with the Mavs decision makers, and unfortunately, we're all having to deal with these repercussions. Because what did the Rangers do other than win a World Series championship? Unless there was a secret deal they made.
I mean, what do we do with all these injuries and bad karma BS things that we're going through?
How do we get
rid
of this?
Yeah, what do we need to do?
I think we might need a sacrifice.
Ostrich egg sacrifice? What are we doing?
Take the ham slap.
Hey, if that's what it's going to take.
Yeah.
I'm up for anything.
Let's do it.
I've always been willing to put my body on the line for the betterment of the team.
It should probably start with firing Nico. You know, just to see if that cleanses everything.
Okay.
And fire him by way of the ham slap.
So we do it downtown Dallas, like in front of a crowd, like everybody chanting and stuff like that?
That would
like
be.
Absolutely.
Back in the medieval times?
Yeah, you got to do it up.
Are we talking like the firing squad?
No, not that. No, shame. No, shame.
Too far. A firing squad of ham slaps.
No, he just has to.
Which one's it going to be?
He hands in his badge and walks out, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
All right, that's interesting. Now, we didn't really get a chance to dive all the way into this, and I want to know your answer because Ian Eagle is making fun of Bill Raftery because he has to print out
sneak beers out.
Yeah,
Bill's a known drunk. He admits it.
I know
he does.
I'm not disputing you. It's just jarring to hear somebody go, he's a known drunk.
It is. His favorite time is happy hour.
Oh wait, is he the one that just recently said something along the lines of my favorite call is last call?
Last call.
Yes. The double up.
Yes, he did
on the drinks.
Yeah.
So he does lean into it.
Yeah. He got made fun of because he has to print out his boarding pass for the airplane. Are you also somebody who has to print out your boarding pass for the plane? And if so, can you please tell me why?
Don't have to, but I usually do end up doing that because the apps, I can't manage them, you know? It's like
airplane apps.
What was that laugh? The apps. I can't manage
the phone apps for the airlines. You know, I think a couple that I signed up for back in the day was on our email when we were on CBS. I don't know why I signed up with a work email, but I did. And so having to jump through the hoops to get that transferred over to a new email, I would just rather print my boarding pass.
Okay. So we asked the question, is there anything you don't trust technology to do for you? Because my wife goes, you still have an alarm clock. And so I still have an actual alarm clock that I'll push the button, get up for, and everything.
How
like
far
that.
Away from your bed is it?
It is right next to my bed, but I never push the button and go back to sleep.
Does your wife set it like an hour and 10 minutes early or later?
No, it's set.
We've been talking about that here lately.
So
that is a thing in my house.
Dawson's problem.
But I think the alarm clock is good because I like to wake up. Well, I wake up like 12 times in the middle of the night, but I like to see what time it is.
Okay. So the way Jess does this, and she knows this drives me insane. When she was still full-time teaching, she would set 6 alarms in the morning.
Ooh, yeah,
and they would be really loud.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad. This was before we had Noah. I'm really glad that she's teaching the next generation on all of that stuff. But I don't need to wake up at 5:30 in the morning. No. Mm-hmm. So if we could just lower the volume, and then it would go off at 5:31, 5:36, 5:42. And I was like, why?
Yeah.
Set the one alarm that you need and let's go.
I love a good snooze, man. Really do. I'm a big time culprit in that. My wife can't stand it either. I just hit the snooze button. I don't set a million alarms. It's the same alarm, but it's going to pop off every about 2-3 minutes.
But what's
or so.
The appeal of that as opposed to setting it where and getting more sleep to begin with?
Because there's just that process of having to convince yourself to get out of bed. And you know, if you have the self-awareness, you know that you need that time to negotiate with your own self about whether or not you're going to do the things that you need to do.
Just a couple more minutes.
Man. And I know it's not good for you. Yeah. Like the sleep experts say, you should just pop up.
Yeah.
And every once in a while I have a pop-up moment and I'm like, it's going to be a day.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be a day. Yeah. And then like 3 months later, I have another one.
See, I was going to ask you guys.
Every quarter.
I tend to wake up like 2 or 3 minutes before the alarm even goes off.
See, that's impressive.
If somebody your body clock is dialed.
Somebody goes, hey, tell me a skill you have. I can wake up before the alarm goes off.
That's impressive. No matter the alarm?
No matter. 2 minutes every single time.
That's amazing.
Every single time.
So it's not the same time every day. It's just whatever the alarm says, it's going to be a couple minutes before.
I can, if I
That's set psychopathic.
It for, if I say it no, for 8
it's
o'clock,
awesome.
If I it set is. It for 8 a.m., I will get up at 7:58. My eyes will open up. I'll look at the clock. And I'll turn it
time
off
for daddy to take a pee pee
before it goes. Yeah,
what's the first thing you do when you
I'm
wake up?
I'm 61 years old, bro. What do you think?
How many times are you peeing in the night these days?
I don't have to. It's been weird.
Oh really?
Yeah, you could take like vitamins and stuff.
You take a pee vitamin, anti pee vitamin.
Yeah. You wear the overnight diaper.
There's an anti pee vitamin.
At what age do you get the anti pee vitamin?
Vitamin P.
Or you just
you just don't drink a bunch of liquid before you go to bed.
See, and that's the tough part. I love a good chug before I hit the sheets, man.
Oh, we know.
That last chug of the day, it's important.
I really hope we got specifically what you said as a drop, because that was tremendous, the way you specifically.
I painted that picture.
You really did.
It's a water chug, cold water chug.
Cold
water chug at night, especially in the morning, the cold water chug's important.
Yeah.
What is the point of a cold water chug at night, though?
It's just the soothing factor. I like being cold at night, so that like starts the process of wind down time. Yeah. Body knows when it gets chilly, it's time to shut the eyes.
Okay. Man, you guys are so in touch with your body. I like it. Now.
I told you.
We're a show for the people.
That's right.
We're going to go around the bodies at 2:40 today.
I find is that if I eat a lot of sugary snacks at night, that makes me have to pee a lot.
That makes you have to pee a lot.
Yep, at night. Huh,
that's not what I thought you were going to say. That makes you have trouble going to sleep. And I was like, that makes sense. But
so you eat a bag of donuts, you're up all night.
I don't know specifically about the donuts, but if it's a flurry of chocolate chip cookies, donuts, you know, variety of stuff, if my diet's off, high sugar in the bloodstream,
you just ate a party platter of cookies and stuff like that. That's what you're doing.
Well, not lately. But that has happened, Brian. I'm telling you, I do not have a healthy relationship with food. I just crash diet 4 months out of the year.
Okay.
You always win the challenges.
Have you slipped up at all?
I mean, what would you say Fruit Loops counts as a sweet?
Yes. I would argue that it's one of the worst things you could put in your mouth.
Okay. Yes. Then it didn't go well last night.
Was it the whole box? Hey, that nighttime cereal becomes much more enticing as the sun goes down.
And that big chug of water and that nighttime
and
cereal.
Nice big old bowl of cereal.
And that three cheeseburger patty that I eat every day.
Hey, that's lunch.
Eric, I want to know if this applies to you then. Do you ever feel judged by a place that tells you that this meal is like for 3 to 4 people and it's just for you and your wife. Yes. And you're like, hey, screw you, Wingstop. I don't know what like the guidelines are, but this is for us too.
I'll decide if this is a family meal or not. When we were at the airport waiting for our flight to go to Arizona, I ordered the patty melt, and I knew I should have ordered an additional patty on top of it. And the lady was like, nah, you really don't. This is like, oftentimes people share this particular sandwich.
Which
and I was
ridiculous.
Like, okay, I let her convince me that I didn't need the extra patty. I trusted a stranger, and that's the last time I do that.
That
it
Culver's,
was like the thinnest, just Culver's bare minimum. Like, there's
too.
No way people no, are sharing this sandwich.
That was awful.
It was a sad
I feel like you've been milk. Compensating ever since.
I have kind of swung the pendulum, maybe a touch too far.
Like every time, it's like, no, but that one time I didn't get the extra patty.
Make it 4 patties.
Make it 17 patties, please. I'll have 17 of them. It's delicious.
You're just obsessed with ground beef, aren't you?
I love ground beef or pattied up. I mean, the patty actually tastes better.
Multiple
if you're pattying it up, it tastes better.
Came out of the kitchen to see who you were as a human when you took down the triple burger, and then one of them bought you a dessert because they were so impressed that you got that
I
done.
Mean, they were more stunned you weren't obese.
One of the honors
they
of a lifetime.
Me, and I was like, it's no,
I was sitting right next to them. They're like, is this the guy? No, not me.
I actually had order envy because of the mac and cheese with the bacon.
It was good.
The bacon mac and cheese was something that was just one of those swing and misses for me.
You could have piled it in there.
I was thinking about it. I was like, man, that would actually taste good.
Could
I almost scooped some
of
yours
mac,
and put it on my burger.
What do you guys got coming up on the program today?
Pure Gold, as always, thanks for asking. We will talk about everything that developed over the weekend and has developed so far today, including this Anthony Davis news right out of the gates. Greg Wyshynski joins us at 4. He's the former Puck Daddy from Yahoo Hockey coverage.
Oh, yeah.
Now he's with ESPN, and he'll tell us how amazing the Stars are at 4.
The Anthony Davis countdown return has begun.
Woo!
We're the KNC Masterpiece. Make your way back with us tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here. On 105.3 The Fan.
Say goodnight, Kevin.
Goodnight, Kevin.